marriages that might not end in divorce, but they're not happy. There's people going through the motions, and people who have gone through divorce. Scripture says, Matthew 19, Mark 10, Jesus says that like the reason why there was a area of the law that permitted divorce, the New Living Translation says it was a concession to your hard hearts. And so like divorce is a result of hard hearts. And it isn't that two parties are both equally guilty of a hard heart, but in some way, both parties hardened some measure of their heart. And that's what, like, I'd say maybe the internal work we all have to stay committed to is maintaining a soft heart. It's risky. It means you can get hurt. C.S. Lewis talks about the only way to become impervious to hurt is to put your heart in a casket and bury it, and there it becomes impenetrable. But he also says it's irredeemable. So that's the alternative we have. We can be impervious to pain and hurt, but the dark side of that is it's irredeemable. It's a heart of stone. You cannot receive love if you want to avoid pain.
So we've all been married a long time, but a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Austin, you're with us today. You've just recently celebrated 14 years.
We did. Yep, right? Yesterday.
That's awesome. So what is different about you now than when you first got married? What's something that's changed? Who wants to jump in?
Gray hair.
Still my answer. Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Sadly, I'm not sure I can say that.
You were gray. You were gray at like 17.
Yeah.
I know one thing that was a key aspect, probably for worth some of this discussion. I was a horrible listener.
Mm.
Really terrible. Way more talkative, a lot worse at listening. So what's changed in 16 years of marriage is that I'm better at listening. I'm not ever going to claim I'm good at it, but I'm better. Yeah. Looking for affirmation and
There were some half nods in there, but
Austin and I are at a disadvantage. We can't our claims. We can't have confirmation,
or we're at an advantage.
Yes,
we can just throw stuff out there.
It's true. It's true.
Either way, we'll get fact checked for sure.
Check those comments
section out there.
I'm sure our wives will adjust any expectations we falsely set.
Sure.
So how about you, Austin?
So some things that come to mind for me, probably I'm an overall kinder, more compassionate person than when I first got married. I probably share better. And because that was something I wasn't ready for in marriage.
Yeah.
You know, like getting ready for the day, and I look over and my wife is wearing my jacket or something like that. And I'm like,
Who do you think you are?
What are we doing here? And she's like, I'm just going to wear your jacket. Yeah. I'm like,
she did that to me all growing up. Yes. Like, thanks.
We covenanted two is one.
Yep. So then I find out her upbringing, you know, it was like community closets.
Yep.
Like anyone can wear anyone's stuff.
Yep.
I did not grow up the same way. It was kind of like, hey, we all had our own stuff. And so I learned real quick how to share.
Yeah.
So I could go down a long list of things that have overall been improved as a result of being married to Abby.
That's awesome. Anna?
Man, this is hard for me.
Because you were already so nice and kind and compassionate.
I didn't mean it that way.
Are there some negative things that have changed about you as a result of
being
married? Because I've overall improved, which probably means if the water table's got leveled, hers had to come down for mine to go up.
Because I could see a lot of changes like in the kids' side, like the things that change you, you know.
Being married, we got 16 years, also having kids. Yeah. Kids definitely changes you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know I've changed. You know, I think just like being a lot more quiet was something that's changed about me. And not, like just
like,
being
like you're less quiet.
You're more willing. How about to this? I feel like I'm more confident. Like there's more of a confidence.
There we go.
That's something that's changed. Sorry, it took me a little bit to get there. But, you feel free to chime in.
No,
this is a great moment to do.
I would say that 16 years ago, you would have never considered doing this. So that would be a change.
So
I'm sorry.
You guys have been married 16 years.
Our marriage can drive.
That's awesome. Josh, how long have you been married?
We're two more weeks.
Yeah, 2 more weeks and we'll be hitting 18 years.
Let's go. Yeah. Congrats, man.
You're an adult.
You're an adult now. You're a double adult.
Your marriage can vote.
Yes. And smoke cigarettes, unfortunately. Yeah.
There you go. So,
And
die in war.
Oh man, it went dark. Sorry.
My bad.
So myself, I would say I've learned some new skills. I can cook more than just pancakes now.
Popcorn was your jam.
Yeah.
When you first got married.
So. Yes. Yeah. I could do popcorn and that was pretty much it because I could push the popcorn button. I also was a very adept at making a spoonful of peanut butter. And that was prior to getting married. That was my kind of go-to meal. So I've improved in that category. I'm more helpful in domestic tasks. I'm not going to claim that I am nearer to the level that I need to be, but I have improved. I'm not completely inept. You know, growing up with four little sisters and a mom who was very good at taking care of the house, I didn't develop a lot of those homemaking type skills. And whenever you're in partnership with somebody and you're both working and you both are raising kids, like, you know, you got to be able to pull weight even across
the domestic. Normal,
gender lines or whatever. And so, I've learned, some new culinary skills, some new, I can technically load the laundry. Like I know, I know how to sort between the lights and darks and add the stuff. So yeah, become more of a woman, I guess. Is what,
so we're going there.
That's
this
podcast. Okay,
yeah, that comes down to
no.
So on the peanut butter piece, I have a peanut butter marriage story.
Okay. Yeah.
So this story marked the transition of our marriage from honeymoon phase to whatever the next the sophomore year, whatever you want to call it, the sophomore slump. So. Something about me, we may have mentioned this in one of the podcasts we've done before, but I, up until here recently, had this nightly routine of eating 2 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and a giant glass of milk. Okay. So Abby, being the sweet wife that she is, would always volunteer to whip those sandwiches up for me. Okay. So we hadn't been married very long at this point, a few years maybe. So we pull into the house, it's late at night, and we're in the driveway, and I look over and I give the look, okay? That's like, hey, like, you know, things are about to go down in the house, not food related, but you know, like, like I'm heating up the crock pot, so to speak, okay? So I give what I think is the look, and she looks at me and she goes, honey, I'm so sorry, we're out of bread. And so at that moment, I realized that my let's go have sex look has been misinterpreted as I'm hungry, like, please make me some sandwiches look.
Oh my gosh.
And so that was the defined period where it's like, we are no longer in the honeymoon phase. Whatever, whatever, like, swag I had, I no longer have.
Your smolder has cooled a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
that's a really good story.
Yeah. So anyway, there's that.
Yeah, well, I mean, peanut butter changes things, and you have too much of it, it changes it in a negative way. So.
Right, that's why I've laid off the PB&J.
Yeah, because like maybe that look would have worked.
Since, that changed since we first got married. I am not the same size.
Yeah,
I was, and I've gone up and down a lot in 16 years.
Yeah, so I gained the first year of marriage. I think I gained 40 pounds.
Wow.
And then I kept that 40 pounds and kept adding more for a number of years and only recently was able to get back to sort of pre-marriage and marriage weight, which is good. But anyway, that, man, marriage adds some weight to the miles.
So, I just imagine you like looking over.
Oh,
and she's just like, oh, honey.
I know. No, yeah. Everything in me that I thought was being communicated non-verbally was saying, like, let's get it on.
Yeah.
and how it was received was,
I have no bread.
I have no bread.
Yeah.
Yep. And in that moment, it was,
I'm hungry.
Make did me y'all talk about it?
We did. Does she know that story? So this is a good, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Like we tell this story and we laugh about it. I did not ask for approval to share that story, but we've shared it. I'm sure that's okay. But, but yeah, so we did, you know, open up some conversation about it. Just laugh. I mean, it's like, wow, we're at that point of marriage where this gets misinterpreted as, I'm hungry. Can you make me some sandwiches? Oh,
man. Well, in case the topic wasn't super clear, we're talking about marriage today. And we want to talk about what it takes to have a marriage that endures. Now, obviously, you know, we've hit some milestones in our own marriages, but there's marriages, you know, that have gone 30, 50, 60 years. Right. So we're not claiming to be experts in this, but we have learned some things along the way. And we just wanted to kind of share some of those things and just common traps that we see people run into, you know, either early in marriage or, you know, depending on what your story may be. Like maybe you've had a failed marriage in your past. Maybe you've, you know, gone through some struggles. Maybe you're in the middle of something right now. And so we just want to kind of talk through, what does it take to have a marriage that endures for the long haul? And so we can kind of unpack that in a number of different ways. But yeah, I think it's helpful just even to hear some of those little revelation moments that we've all had. So, so Pastor Jacob, as we were kind of framing this even ahead of time, like there is this idea of like, we're not the same person that we were when we entered into that relationship. And marriage is, you know, very much like anything in life, like we're in the process of becoming someone else. And so as we kind of look at the marriage relationship and even just kind of reflect on our own stories, like, what do we need to kind of keep in mind whenever we have that sort of baseline understanding of like, hey, we're not the same people now than when we started. And when you go into marriage with that as an expectation, instead of just like, hey, this person's never going to change and they're, I'm going to build this relationship on this picture I have of them. How does that change the way that we can kind of, you know, prepare for the long haul, so to speak?
Yeah. To state the obvious, right here at the onset, marriage is hard and it requires work. It is a very, very worthwhile work. And it is, just because something's hard doesn't make it bad. It's really good. But it doesn't get really good without a lot of work. So, when I think through all the different possibilities of any of the viewers or listeners, that, you know, in our area, it's a little more common to marry young. And there is sometimes in an unhealthy expectation, like you need to get married young. But that's just generally, you get married young. And just being in a church environment, it can be very difficult to admit struggle with marriage. It's very easy, not because of, I just saw the different reasons, to feel shame when you're going through a struggle. And so, when we were setting it, kind of just framing maybe this, a lot of this conversation, it's probably more directly related to people in kind of the long haul of marriage, that, when, you know, your early stages of marriage, the volatility is different than the volatility that happens after, you know, 8-10 years. So, one of the key fundamental ideas just with marriage is like, you are changing, whether you want to or not, whether you're trying or not, you are changing. So, you are not the person you were a week ago, a month ago, a year ago, a decade ago. And coming into marriage, we have to like check our expectations about ourselves and about the other person, and the motives from which we got married. Are we married because we think that this person completes me? There's all sorts of false narratives that are being projected onto marriage right now. And Austin has a great quote about this that I want to get and just hit just a second. But, you know, more energy and money is spent on the wedding and it being Instagram worthy than on the marriage.
Right.
This is something you have spent a lot of time with premarital counseling, like working through with people that there's narratives of what relationship is, marriage is, romance is, culturally, that shapes how we view this relationship. And if one narrative would be that, like, her role in my life, my wife's role in my life, is to make me happy or me complete, that's a cultural narrative. It's not a biblical stance for marriage. Back when we were dating, we would call it missionary dating. I don't know what it's called now, if it's called anything, but like, we would have, you know, friends or whatever that's like, well, I'll date. It was usually a female with a guy. The female would say, well, I can change him. I can get him saved. I'm in this relationship to bring him closer to Christ. Mm-hmm. It sometimes was the reverse, but almost always it was a female. But there's a different version of that. It's like, well, I'll marry him, and in the process of marrying him, I will change him. Well, you have fundamentally taken the role of God in that person's life, and that is recipe for disaster in your marriage. So, what then? The question would be, like, if we're going to be in this for the long haul, and when we talk about marriage, God views it as a covenant and with a measure of sacred. In my opinion, I think there's three main sacraments. There's the baptism of waters, the sacrament of baptism. There's the sacrament of communion. And I would say right next to that is the sacrament of marriage, mm-hmm. That marriage is sacramental. It's incarnating the life of God in a unique way that other mediums cannot. Mm-hmm. And so God takes it very seriously. We're called to take it very seriously. But in taking it seriously, we have to have the right frame. And that frame would be that her and I in a marriage, we are better together, but this relationship glorifies God and extends his kingdom in a unique way. And I'm changing. I will change. And how do I stay committed in covenant to a person who's also changing, and cultivate the relationship with the person that is going to change, no matter how much I like the way she is now, or she likes the way I am now, or I like the way I am now, I will change. There's some parts about me that might not change very much or very fast, but as a person, I'm changing. And we have to pay attention to those things and God's word and God's presence and God's direction in those things for us to make it in the long haul.
Yeah. Austin, you want to share that quote? Sure. I think this really speaks to a lot of the different dynamics that we walk through in marriage.
We'll be right back. Have you ever wondered what's at the root of homelessness?
I used to try to describe it to my husband that I said, I feel like I'm in this big spider web and I'm stuck in there.
And how wraparound approaches at missions aim to make a difference?
It's the things like that, the people who communicated that in spite of my rough edges, that they authentically cared about me.
On the Restorers podcast, we'll talk to experts, investigate current issues, share stories, and give you an inside look at how we at Water Street Mission tackle issues related to homelessness and poverty every single day. Join us by searching Restorers wherever you find your podcasts.
Sure. So this quote comes from Stanley
Hauerwas.
Hauerwas. Yeah, there you go. So destructive to marriage is the self-fulfillment ethic that assumes marriage and the family are primarily institutions of personal fulfillment, necessary for us to become whole and happy. The assumption is that there is someone out there just right for us to marry, and that if we look close enough, we'll find the right person. The moral assumption overlooks a crucial aspect to marriage. It fails to appreciate the fact that we will always marry the wrong person. We never know whom we marry. We just think we do. Or even if we marry at first the right person, just give it a little while and he or she will change. For marriage, being the enormous thing that it is, means that we are not the same person after we've entered it. The primary problem is learning how to love and care for the stranger to whom you now find yourself married.
Mm-hmm. So that idea of loving the stranger that we now find ourselves married, like, I think almost everybody would probably admit, like, that first year of marriage is sort of like a wake-up call of like, oh, this is who you are, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like there's a little bit of going into it where with, you know, like you've got your best foot forward, like you're just, you know, you're in love, you're excited, you're like, you know, looking with enthusiasm toward building a life together. And then you start building that life together. Mm-hmm. And then like, there's no time to hide the shortcomings. Yeah,
there's a meme that's like the biggest threshold in every romantic relationship is not the first kiss, but the first fart.
Right. Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. Incidentally, I specifically recall my first passing of gas in front of Audrey. It was like 2 days before we got married. And I was like, oh no, oh no. It happened. And it was very
She's
loud.
She's going to leave me.
Yeah. I was like, it's gone. I was like, I've been storing that up for 4 months. What's going on? Anyway. Hey, just popping in real quick to remind you, if you've not hit that like button, please do so and hit the subscribe. We would love to grow this subscriber count up higher so we can reach more and more people with this content. And a quick heads up, our next episode will be the final one of this season, and we're doing a live question and response episode. So keep on the lookout to our channels for when that will be going live. And so you can jump in and participate and ask us questions, and we'll be happy to offer a response. All right, let's get back to the episode. Bring the threshold down a little bit. But
our audience of like junior high boys will love this.
There you go.
But it speaks to when we are in the process of cultivating love in the relationship that we desire to move towards the covenant, even if it's all godly, we all have a temptation to present a facade of ourselves.
Yeah.
We want to bring our full self, but we also want to receive love. So there's a tension that we constantly all manage of how do I present myself with as much authenticity of who I am as I can, but without so much that I get rejected for it.
Yeah.
And I wish we were all mature enough to know how to do that easily. But that also continues after marriage. It's just there's fewer facades that you can hide behind because you just can't get away from one another. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And while you're obsessed over one another, you just don't see it as much. Mm-hmm. But as that flame just starts to reduce from an uncontrollable fire into a manageable fire, you aren't able to keep a facade, and that you have to, it's better to be able to confront that reality before you get married and before you're committed in relationship, knowing that that's going to happen. But then when it happens in marriage, I think to this quote, and he's using a bit of provocative language, using the word stranger when it's like, it's not like literally a stranger, but I can never get complacent in my pursuit of knowing this person I've made a covenant with, because I will never fully know her and fully have her figured out, because, and then we joke about it sort of in like man woman kind of context, but like as soon as a man figures her out, as soon as I figure her out, it's like she changes. Mm-hmm. And but then we try to start like, well, but man, we just never change, and it's like, that's just not true. Now we can have horrible habits that are hard to change, but as a whole we're still changing, we have to both be willing to never get complacent in our desire to know and show love to the person that I'm continually getting to know.
Yeah. When you think about that, Hannah, what was maybe one of those first sort of wake-up calls in marriage? Maybe wake-up call is a strong word, but just recognizing, oh, I didn't know that about Jacob. I didn't know that was going to be part of this dynamic. Mm.
So curious what you're thinking of. You have the best memory of all of us. So,
gosh, I'm like really quiet today.
And that's why I'm throwing you a question.
I got to get your
perspective.
Your voice needs to be heard in this conversation.
Yeah. I am very.
You're alone. A little outnumbered.
I'm alone here. Yeah. You know, we married. I was 19 when we married. I think Jacob was 23, and I don't know, as I'm listening and thinking about, like, we've really like grown up together. There was a part of like, he had experienced life out of high school and those things. And so in some ways I think, like we were kind of walking together in most of those things. So there was the blessing of, like just having a general understanding that we are, learning as we go, I'm trying to think if there was an isolated.
I don't know about an isolated one. Yeah. I would say one thing I remember, which was a pretty important change in our relationship, is you still maintained a good relationship with your mom.
Yeah.
And to my much appreciation, I did not and do not have a horrible mother-in-law. I don't necessarily think this is advice for anybody, but you still had a natural propensity to talk to your mom about your inner world more than me. And a couple thresholds that you began to entrust me with that. And I did not stink at it as bad as I did when we started. This is what I mean, but like, I was a terrible listener.
Yeah.
So she wants to talk and like, I don't know how to bring anything out of her. It's like, okay, just go talk to your mom then, because she knows what to do with
you. Right.
So I would say that would be one thing that probably was a major important threshold of change. It wasn't necessarily like a dose of reality. You're free to, if you can remember one of those, when whatever facade you had of me was totally broken.
We'll be right back.
Are you driven by a desire to create change? Dive into From Passion to Purpose, where we unlock the stories of nonprofit trailblazers. Get inspired as leaders share invaluable tips and transformative tales that empower you to make a lasting impact in your community. Tune in and ignite your passion into purpose today.
Man, I'm having a hard time remembering, I think, because we've had a lot of challenges, and through those challenges, there's always that opportunity to grow apart or grow together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had other episodes of talking about just like our dating relationship and how there were struggles in that. And so I think that overall, I mean, I remember we were about to celebrate 10 years marriage. This one stands out, and we had a difficult thing to just like talk through. Or I remember it being, for me, it was really difficult. It was financial related. Mm-hmm. And I came to him about that, and I just had this idea of how that was going to go. And I was really struggling internally with this. But to my surprise, when I came to him, he did not respond in any way like I thought he was going to, all for the better. All for more. I think I had worked up in my own mind, shame is where I had gone to, or how he was going to be. And I knew that, and I didn't know if our marriage would make it. That's how much of the story I had kind of gone through.
Kind of built this thing up in your mind.
Yes. Yep. And so that's a way that I experienced something that I didn't expect in him, but it was for the positive. Total for the positive, to where it actually made me feel more safe than I wouldn't have had an experience that gave me that insight of safety, because for the most part, we had just navigated everything, you know, as we go. Many, many, you know, conversations around kids and parenting. I'm trying to remember, maybe one was going way back. This was like first or second year married. The topic of like where we're going to go for what holiday, which was for the most part, Jacob had done a really great job of just our family celebrated everything.
Right.
And he always was for coming along. Like I'm going to do that. I'm pursuing you until a holiday
where after he's a like, first year of marriage.
He's like, yeah, I don't think I want to do that anymore. And he didn't say it that way, but it was like, his heart was not as much into it.
Right.
As much my heart was like, it was an anchor point in my life, if you will. So I'm like, why wouldn't you want this and all this? And that we had a heated discussion where I went quiet and he went really loud, and you know, it was not a fun day. And
it's a fight. We didn't throw anything.
No,
but I would say it would be our worst fight of our marriage.
Yeah, I would say that in reverse. Like, that was not a time in conversation I felt safe. Mm-hmm. And so I think whenever you have so many of not feeling safe in conversations, it can change you, and you end up going away from each other, you right. know? And so that's why I've kind of went backwards in my approach. But I mean, that was one where he had stronger opinions than I thought. And for the most part, he had kept it inside.
Apparently.
So, yeah. And I mean, I'll admit, I mean, like I didn't realize how much that meant to me until, I mean, what does Pastor Lee say? It's not submission until you disagree. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think for him, he really just agreed with everything for me. So it was a moment, and it seems so silly, but those are mm-hmm. normally the things that end up diverting your direction yep. is the silly things or yeah. dumb fights or whatever.
It's the only time in any conversation mm-hmm. it ended with me leaving the house and getting the car. Like right. I just need to walk away.
Right.
And I got in the car and started driving.
Yep.
I don't know where he was going to go.
I didn't either. Yeah. I think it was just like, I just cannot be in this house.
Yeah.
And that's when you called and apologized. And I did too. And I came back and we worked through it.
Yeah.
With still some tension around the subject, but we were just better at yeah. talking it through.
And so that's, communication, certainly has been something that's changed for us. I was more internally processed it. Mm-hmm. Didn't really know how to articulate the things internally. He could talk circles around me, always has been able to. So I didn't always feel safe. And he talks about how listening was something he really worked on. And I think it was 10 years married that I realized, and I mean, that was in the same time frame, like I don't have to have it all processed out and given to him as a finished product. Like it's okay to not have all the answers, right. you know? So, because I think I had experienced times where I don't know. So I'm not going to tell you till I do know. So I hope that makes sense a little bit. Yeah. So you want to say anything to that?
Well, I would say that like, you know, before marriage, our biggest relational understanding, mm-hmm. I would have put as we're on the same team.
Yeah.
Because we got really good at fighting, but fighting each other mm-hmm. against each other. And, we've done this on other episodes. It did destroy our relationship. I mean, it's like we more or less had to start from scratch.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the like baseline understanding starting from scratch was we're on the same team right now. It feels like we're against each other. It feels like we're mm-hmm. on opposing sides, but we've got to work through this knowing we're on the same team. So I felt like we did a decent job of maintaining that, that baseline foundational assumption. But when it got into just the busyness of life, you started adding kids, communication became a lot more difficult. And I didn't have the disciplines to not just make her feel safe. That would be like relational safety is a huge deal for both individuals. It's not a female thing exclusively.
Yeah.
Or like relational safety makes a big deal. But how to cultivate that safety and then how to mine out of her someone who isn't as quickly articulate as I can be. I can go from thought to word fairly quickly.
Y'all saw it demonstrated just kind of on the podcast. So.
whereas she's thinking a mm-hmm. lot and deeply about something, but is not as fast as getting yeah. it out in words. Right. And it would be easy for me to make assumptions, to fill in the gaps, to push her right. or like just get annoyed, like, come on, just say it or get it out. That those things became easy when, especially when life gets busy, that you just mm-hmm. don't work on anymore. And I just realized there was a threshold that I hit that it was like, I'm doing a poor job. One of the things I can do to really be a good husband is help her communicate. Help her get her thoughts out. Mm. And it makes us better teammates together by working through that. And I'm not patient enough. I'm not good at asking questions anymore. I'm making quick assumptions and then I'm filling in the blanks with my own words instead of just being patient and listening and then inquiring deeply. Mm-hmm. I still struggle when the subject is me and it's not good.
Right.
I can struggle with, I don't want to be defensive verbally, so I just shut down.
Right.
And so being a good listener when I'm at fault is still a challenge.
Yeah.
But it was around that same time, a little before our 10-year mark, that I was really working on those things. That foundation of communication, there really is not, there's numerous things that make for a healthy marriage. This is one of the most important ones. I can't say that it's the most important one. It might be, but it's definitely one of the most important ones is the ability to communicate. When you stop communicating well, the relationship will atrophy. It will drift.
Yeah. I remember the first time I had a drive away fight. I don't remember what it was about, honestly. Yeah. It was something petty. But I remember sort of getting up and storming off and then pretty quickly feeling bad and then going and getting ice cream to bring it back as a peace offering.
This is what I was going for, honey.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember even like talking that out with Audrey later, and it just hurt really bad that I would get up and leave. Mm-hmm. And I think the ice cream was helpful, but it was like, it was just a recognition of like, you know what? We can't have an escape button
in
our conflicts. Yeah. Like if one of us just chooses to disengage and just not, like, we're actually not actually, you know, advancing.
Anything. One of the trainings we all did, it was silence or violence.
Yeah.
That is, even if it's not escape from our internal escape, is silence or violence.
Yeah.
The whole concept I crafted around face to face came from, like, in a disagreement, my bodily urge was to like turn and create a shield from this conversation. And I would say it her, but it's not like she's like super violent or, you know, even strong. I mean, she could hurt me, but that would be especially like my wife likes to end the day with a mental, like let it all out. And so process the day.
Yes.
Right. Process the day. And like when I lay down, like the plane's landing.
I think this is very common.
I imagine this is pretty common. Like plane's landing, I'm disengaging and going to sleep.
Yep.
And she would bring up like something she's been stewing on all day and just like start letting it out. And it's like, I can't leave that hanging.
Right.
Especially like, oh, I'm the cause of this pain or this annoyance or this frustration, this discomfort. And like just the physical urge to roll over and like just put my back to her and just shut down. Like was that like, it was like a visible, it, like in something I'm physically trying to enact that is a relational dynamic that I'm turning my face away from her. Because this is uncomfortable, it's painful, especially when I'm fault. Like shame's a big deal to me. I don't like feeling it, and so it has it has more control over me than it should.
Right.
And then if I leverage that either silence or violence, then she's going to stop addressing the negative behavior I might be engaging in that's causing the relational tension.
Yeah.
And so I stopped driving away after that. It was the only time I've ever had a drive off of a disagreement, but I have escaped. Even if I'm physically there, I have escaped numerous conversations, whatever it takes to just get out of the conversation. And I had to experience the pain I caused to recognize that's what's happening and to develop some disciplines to not do that.
Yeah.
It's still not comfortable. We still have a heart, like we'll talk through something and I'll feel that temptation, just totally shut down, just go blank in the face, avert my eyes. I'll physically be here, but I just don't want to be in this conversation. But I'm not going to walk away, but I'm not here.
Yeah.
So something that I wanted to throw out here, when you were talking about the end of the day and how you know, your tendency is to want to process the day. Mm-hmm. And then your tendency is like, once it's rest time, the plane goes... Like it's kind of a crashing more than a landing.
Yeah.
But this thing that I've noticed in marriage where, like you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, marriage is work. But oftentimes the times in the day that you have to work on your marriage are the times in the day where it's also kind of like a time to rest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're coming down off of the day. And for, you know, those who are, employed during the day, you know, you've had a full day at work. For those who have kids in their home, you've had ball games, you've had practices, you've had dealing with kids' emotions, whatever. And so like you've already had this like heavy, potentially a heavy load for that day. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, potentially at the end of all of that, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, now we need to work on our marriage. And so just thinking through how do you create space, carve out times throughout the week or things like that, where it's making room to put the work into the marriage, right, as opposed to it just getting the leftovers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I've found, because my tendency is actually a lot like yours, Hannah. Mm-hmm. Just personally, it's like stuff will percolate in my mind, and then I'll bring it up at the most inopportune times.
Yeah.
Like usually it's me trying to kind of sort through something, maybe something that happened at work or whatever. And Audrey's like, I am so tired. And so yeah. I'll bring the stuff up, and then I can just tell it's like, yeah, she's not really wanting to engage in this right now. And it's not even like conflict even between us. Sure. Sometimes yeah. it's just yeah. like, I just want my best friend to talk to yeah. about this stuff. Yeah. And you get to the end of the day and yeah. you're just, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Our clocks are different. Like she is not a morning person. I can get up pretty early. Usually mm-hmm. recently my sleep's not been very great because I've been fighting off something. But anyway, that sort of circadian rhythm, not mm-hmm. being in sync mm-hmm. yeah. can create it be very difficult to just find those times to intentionally like, hey, let's get on the same page.
I got so tired of, like, I'm in bed and I'm like, it's coming in. Cause like when I started measuring my sleep mm-hmm. and like really like getting in the data, like I was hitting that 3 to 5 minutes.
He's ready to go to bed at like 3 minutes.
It
like,
happens every time on the trail.
It's the worst.
If I'm awake in bed longer than 8 minutes, something's yeah. up. So like by 8 minutes I'm out.
Yeah.
You learn certain habits over time, but there was just these long stretches where she would come to bed and just like really need to talk things out, an issue during the day with yeah. one of the kids or
mm-hmm. a lot of this was in the time where they're all at home.
Yeah.
Stay so at just, home mom season
she wants
where,
to bring yeah, everything like, up.
I need and, grown up conversation.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's yeah. less well, this way now that they're all in school.
Yeah. We also have to develop a lot of good disciplines.
But those are the things that are real life that's real marriage.
Yeah. And, but like out. she would like put it out there. And then like, oh, I feel so much better. And then like now my His brain's running
I can because sleep.
You yeah. needed me to engage. I'm engaging and yeah. I'm listening and you got me there and okay, I'm with you. And she's like, oh, thanks, honey. And yeah. then like she falls asleep and then I'm just up rolling. Yeah. So I got so tired of that. So I've tried to put in better practices. This is where, again, marriages work. Like instead of letting that just happen mm-hmm. and when it happens is whenever she just needs to just put it all out there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like I can do better at various times of the day or while we're doing things. Cooking, I can sit at the bar and just be like, honey, how was your day?
Right.
What is on your mind? Right. And just do better at listening and like pursuing that a little better. I'm not killing it in that category, but it has given me a little more discipline to pursue her throughout the day and not just wait till the end of the day.
Yeah.
Especially when at the end of the day, if we don't want to go right to sleep, we want something else.
Right.
When it's like our sex drive's a lot more like a microwave. There's right. a lot more like a crock pot. Gotta be working on it all day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You just have to learn if you really want to that's the work. You really want to put the work in. You can't wait until you have to. You have to pursue. I say you have to. If you want your marriage to be healthy, the husband is responsible for the initial pursuit. There should right. be some mutual pursuing, absolutely. But yeah. The husband needs to take responsibility for the pursuit yeah. and to pursue like intimacy into me, see into her, see mm-hmm. what's going on and value her as a whole person who has highs and lows, who has emotional ranges and different desires and wants and concerns and cares and initially can be really messy because the way their brains are wired, the way her brain's wired, it's not like mine. And we've had to learn for the sake of communication and unity and intimacy in conversation to have like, hey, I'm changing boxes on you.
Right.
Like that one's a big one. That's like, you're like, I was with you. There's numerous times I've had to be like, hey, I was with you.
Right.
until about 60 seconds ago.
Yeah.
I think you changed subjects, but I don't remember when you switched subjects. Yep. So I've been following you and I know what you said, but I cannot say that I understand what you're talking about.
Right.
It's even yesterday in a car ride we had together. She's like, hey, wait, I'm going back to a conversation we finished about 2 minutes ago or 3 minutes ago or 5 minutes ago.
Like four times.
And then she's like, okay, I'm switching back to this conversation. I'm like, so like literally there's numerous times I just like have to like shake my brain into like, okay, back in that mode.
Yeah. There's a bit of like learning to manage expectations, right? That I think we all have to kind of wrestle with is like, this person thinks differently.
Yeah.
This person feels differently.
Yeah.
And it's not fair for me to assume
that they're
just like me, or that they want the same things or need it the same way, or things like that, or for them to just be able to magically figure it out.
Yeah.
Right. That's always like you're setting up the other party to disappoint you whenever you're just like, not only do I want you to empathize with me, but I don't want to have to tell you what I want. I want you to anticipate my every need. And like we put these kind of unrealistic expectations, whether they're romanticized or whatever, of like, we want this other person to, be able to love us at a level that only Jesus really can at some points. And then it's like, you're setting yourself up to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And then if you turn that back around, it's like, how much are you doing that really for the other person?
Pete Scazzaro has some work on healthy relationships and like what he calls emotionally healthy relationships. And there's some things he writes on expectations. And one of the things is that it's a real expectation only if it's verbalized or articulated and mutually understood and agreed upon.
Right.
Like every other expectation is an unreasonable one.
Yeah.
If it's hidden, if it's unknown, and we're like, we have to face up to that. Like we have tons of expectations that we don't even know we have until we experience disappointment. And disappointment hurt. Disappointment usually is the first initial wave into understanding an expectation, is because that's what happens in the gap between experience and expectation. When your expectation is high, but your experience is low, that gap is disappointment.
Right.
So disappointment would be the first, I'd say if you're going to listen to this, like, where have you experienced disappointment? Mm-hmm. That's your first window into your expectations. And are they known? And in marriage, you have tons and tons of expectations. That's just part of like even the first year of marriage is like, oh, like I had these assumptions. I had these stories. I had these expectations that, you were going to behave a certain way. And like for every husband out there, she's not your mom. Mm-hmm. And you don't want that.
Right.
But like usually if you had a good mom, you come into a marriage sort of projecting some of those expectations onto your wife. Some of them you might know, like, your mom used to cook really well and your wife might not cook really well, or your mom wasn't a good cook, but your wife is a good cook and you have different expectations and different stories about that.
Right.
Or who has to do laundry, especially if you talk about all the homemaking type skills that you just never developed.
Yep.
And then you go into a marriage and now all of a sudden you don't even know you expect your wife to do all of those things for you. And she expects you to chip in. And like all those things is what that, when the facade of that first 2 years mm-hmm. of marriage, those are the facades and all of that, you can trace most of that back to some kind of expectation you have of each other or about life.
Yeah.
Something that in conversation with couples that I found to be really helpful is going back to marriage's work, connecting the dots for people with what are the things that you've done in work that you've had success with, and how can you take those principles or skill sets and apply them to your marriage.
Right.
So I may be talking with somebody who, is self-employed or runs their own business or something like that, and they have clients that they, or they're in sales, whatever. And it's like, so what skills have you had to learn, or what ways do you interact with your clients that have been fruitful and effective for you? And they'll immediately go, oh, these things, boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. And they'll run down the list.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well, how can you take some of the things that you've learned there and apply it to your marriage?
Right.
And it's like, there's a light bulb moment that goes off where it's mm-hmm. like, oh man, I pay more attention to the wants and needs and desires of my clients than I do my own spouse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so things like that, or, I mean, even recently for me, it was in conversation with Abby of, you know, ideas on how we can grow and all of that. And it hit me like, okay, well, because we were, you know, talking about parenting, and it was, well, what are the things that I feel like I've done well and that have been effective in leading staff? And how can I take some of those and apply them to leading my home?
Right.
And so, like, implementing some of those things, like a weekly meeting. Mm-hmm. I know, like, for some people that may sound like really...
It's not very romantic, is it?
It could sound revolutionary to some.
Yes, but implementing the weekly meeting, where it's like, if you're running a business or something like that, an organization, you have these things that you consistently look at and pay attention to and check in on. And so implementing something like that with our family, where Abby and I, once a week, we sit down. And so this is like kind of going back to the, how do you work on something that's typically in the margins that are more like rest.
Right.
And it is finding, you know, a time slot out of the week that is intentional, where we know that we're going to be at our best and at our sharpest, which for me is not, you know, 10 o'clock at night.
Right.
As people who I have had to couch surf in their house with for a period of time can attest, like, I get tired at night. So, so that's not my ideal time. Like, I wouldn't set an important conversation with anyone that I lead or anyone that I work with at 10 o'clock at
or
night.
Or even anyone that you're pastoring.
Yes.
Like, you might accidentally happen at that time.
That's like code red.
You would never intentionally set an important conversation for 10 p.m.
No. And so similar thing with Abby. Let's find a time in the week, put it on the calendar, and do that.
Hey, future Josh here, just cutting in. We actually had an idea after we finished recording this episode that we wanted to slot in here real quick. Pastor Austin has a resource that he wants to share. So what is that?
Yeah, so it's just we're talking about the family meeting. Mm-hmm. And so I got this from a good friend of ours, Jesse Anderson, and have just kind of made a few tweaks for our family. And it's just an agenda for that family meeting. So maybe something that we can post in the description to give kind of a starting place for people who are looking to implement this.
Awesome. Well, let's get back to the conversation and be sure to check out that link in the description.
And so that's been helpful. Same thing with our kids. And so that's been one of those things where if people can take, okay, what are the things that I have found success in other areas?
Mm-hmm.
And might there be things that I can transfer over into improving my marriage?
Yeah. I think even having, like, kind of building on that idea is like setting different types of family meetings, so to speak, or like knowing, like, I need to have a conversation with Audrey and we need to get into sort of family business. Like, what's our financial plan? What's our, the things that we're, but going into it with that expectation that way you're not trying to like fit in romance and like relational stuff. And, oh yeah, by the way, we got to look at the budget from last month. And like, that's where I think we mess it up a lot of the times is where we try to throw everything in all at once. But we need to keep those things, like, that's a part of managing expectations, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, if I'm taking Audrey out and I, ahead of time, am saying, hey, these are the kind of things that we need to talk about. The setting doesn't need to be the most fancy romantic restaurant because we're going to be getting into, you know, calendar. Our monthly budget.
It's and calendar. Yep, calendar and money is going to be one of the hardest things.
But I also have to recognize, like, family. If that's all we ever talk about one-on-one, like, I'm not really doing a good job of like stirring the romance tank and filling that up. You know, it's like, we also need time to just be ourselves together to build relationship, to build connection. Mm-hmm. And so being intentional, like even making the environment and setting those expectations ahead of time, I think is really valuable as well.
And I think those simple practical things in hitting those in a frequent rhythm of calendar. I mean, especially for people who are in a busier stage of life, being able to sit down and go, here's what the week looks like, lay it out, talk through things, get on the same page, because someone mentioned it earlier. It's the, when we were talking about conflict resolution, you mentioned that it's often the silly things or these little things, or scripture would say it's the little foxes. And these little things that come up, whether it's scheduling or finances, that you're just on two different pages on, or you know, one person didn't see coming and now it flares into this big thing. Being proactive, now that doesn't say that it's going to remove all uncertainty or anything like that. But getting on the same page out ahead of it has been helpful. Like, and with us, and this is something that we've just recently, this like in the past few months, started doing in this way, like going over where the person's at emotionally, mentally, spiritually, of just a simple thing. Like we do a light system, green, yellow, red. Where are you at on these? And what can we do this week to move this towards closer to a green? And the same, we do the same thing with our kids, where it doesn't have to be this long, hour and a half long thing. It can be something that you can hit, because once you start doing it in a consistent rhythm, it moves from, we have this 5 hour long conversation once a year to like, we have this touch point once a week.
Right. There's a question that Pastor Zach shared recently at one of our campus pastor gatherings that I've started to use, and it's been really painful and really helpful. But it's the idea of when you're trying to grow in just self-awareness of how you are being received and perceived to members of your family, you ask them this question, or it's kind of two parts of the same question. It's like, what am I doing that you wish I wouldn't do? And what am I not doing that you wish I would? And I had that conversation recently with Audrey, just fully braced for like, oh man, this is not going to feel good, the response. And it, you know, her response was a very simple thing that I was aware of. And in my mind, I'm thinking,
did you have ice cream ready to go?
No, no. Yeah, it was, it was like,
this is the freezer just in case.
It was something, you know, I'll just say what it was, because nothing like super crazy, but like, she just asked if I would pick up after myself more with the laundry. And it was like, you know, I had a habit of just, you know, I would change in the room, I would just leave my clothes on the floor instead of just immediately putting them away. And to me, it's like, I could come up with all the justifications in the world as to why, like, oh, well, I do it because of this. And if I leave it at that, instead of hearing, hey, I just offered just a chance for like sincere feedback. If I ignore that, like, I'm not stewarding the marriage well in that situation. Or I can choose to humble myself and say, yeah, I can do better.
Yeah.
And start making steps towards that. Because what she sees is that not only did I give her a chance to call me on something that needed to be addressed, but if I follow through, it's showing that I care. It's showing that I value what she said, and things like that. Well, we recently did that with the kids as well, which is also a very enlightening thing to go through. And it can be so difficult to hear the truth from people who you love and people that love you. But it's really necessary, I think, for growth. And, you know, the when things go unsaid for too long, they build up and become those things that really do harden our hearts over time.
That's what I wanted to make sure we circle back to, where, where we kind of first began, is you're changing. We're all changing. The question is, like, who are we becoming, and do we want to be that person, or is there a different vision of our future that we need to cultivate that's more Christ-like? And I would say that it can be in the early stages of marriage, and certainly any stage of marriage is at risk of this. But the scriptures are clear, Proverbs 4:23, like, out of our heart, everything flows. So how do we make sure and protect our heart? And just what I've seen, marriages that might not end in divorce, but they're just, they're not happy. There's people going through the motions, and people who have gone through divorce, scripture says, Matthew 19, Mark 10, Jesus says that, like, the reason why there was a area of the law that permitted divorce, the New Living Translation says it was a concession to your hard hearts. And so like divorce is a result of hard hearts. And it isn't that two parties are both equally guilty of a hard heart, but in some way, both parties hardened some measure of their heart. And that's what, like, I'd say maybe the internal work we all have to stay committed to is maintaining a soft heart. It's risky. It means you can get hurt. C.S. Lewis talks about the only way to become impervious to hurt is to put your heart in a casket and bury it, and there it becomes impenetrable. But he also says it's irredeemable. And so that's the alternative we have. We can be impervious to pain and hurt, but the dark side of that is it's irredeemable. It is a heart of stone. You cannot receive love if you want to avoid pain. Maintaining a soft heart, you will experience pain, and it quite possibly will come from the person you are married to. But you have to be willing to run that risk in order to maintain the health of the heart and the relationship. But I would say that many of the issues that come to me or that come to like pastoral staff, that are marriages that are in trouble, the issue that is the current issue almost never is the actual issue. It's where we now have surfaced, and if we trace it back, nearly always I can trace it back to hurt and hardness. Usually it's both. A hurt that caused a hardness. My spouse did this to me, this particular thing to me, said this particular thing to me, or repetitiously says this or repetitiously does this.
Right.
And my coping mechanism for that isn't to lash out and be vicious, but it's to grow cold. So unforgiveness starts to fester and cause a coldness or hardness of heart. Busyness, it's not necessarily like a hurt, but the drifting is I will gravitate towards where I find joy, and your spouse can be a great source of joy. Or a great source of pain. And there's many marital conversations I'm listening to. These two people cause each other pain.
They
got hurt way back. They came into marriage immature. They didn't have a community to help through that maturity, or a mentor to help through the maturity. So they took their immaturity out on each other, hurt each other, didn't know how to work through the hurt. So they went from hurt to hard. And now they're just at each other. The only way to save that is to see, can we go back to the hurt? Can we get that healed in Christ? And then can we put some effort and work into not causing each other pain, bringing joy? Because I'd say that when I look at a person who no longer gets joy from the relationship, they're still looking for joy. So they're going to find a pseudo joy. What some of the authors that have read called a pseudo joy. So that's an addiction or whatever. But I can tell you at least from a male perspective, I know there's going to be a female kind of alternative to this. From a male perspective, if my wife is not bringing me joy, and over a long period of time, I harden my heart to that, I'm just going through the motions of marriage. But a female comes into my life that gives me that attention, brings some sense of joy, doesn't matter how illicit or sinful it is, joy is joy.
Right.
You feel it, you get that dopamine hit, you will start pursuing that joy. And so that's what makes at least men susceptible to affairs, is that the place that's supposed to be a source of joy is now a source of pain or boredom. And I don't put in the work to work through that, and I'm just drifting. And then all of a sudden another source of joy comes, and I become susceptible to sin and really horrible mistake that most people really, they just destroy their lives with that. And again, you trace it back to at some point in time, you chose to harden your heart. And that's the danger. I'd say that the people that are in the long haul of marriage, that isn't like the initial volatility, you make it through kind of the first wave. Because if you look at like when most divorces happen, most happen in the first 2 years. And then the second most frequent time is like the year 6 to 8. So 7 year itch is what it's called. Usually that's when a kid or multiple kids got introduced. So life turned busy. You know, as a husband, you were no longer the important person. There's all these other little important little, you know, humans. And you're further into your career. you have start having separate lives. So that's right. And then, but then the third most frequent time is empty nest.
Right. Is you don't have the thing that was keeping you together in the house anymore.
Yeah.
Like you haven't built a relationship.
A lot of people say, like, I don't want a divorce. We'll stay together for the sake of the kids.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, that's not a big enough reason to stay married. And so often in the empty nest, it was already cold. Now we just go hard.
Right. Mm. Yeah. I think one of the big revelations for me in my journey as a husband was recognizing some parts of my life where I had just ongoing chronic emotional immaturity. Mm-hmm. Just didn't know how to deal with pain or uncomfortable feelings. And so I would prefer, rather than to share those or to bring those out in a way that God could use my wife to love me through those things, I would try to isolate and deal with those things on my own. And when you have a habit of trying to be self-sufficient, you're actually sabotaging your marriage, you know, in the long run, because it's the process of loving and being loved that builds that foundation of mutual trust that you can continue to build a life on. Like when you have those shared experiences of like pain and sadness and discomfort. But when you can work through that and then come back to relationship and come back to joy, that gives you more like of a firm foundation to kind of continue to build on. But whenever we get into the habit of either seeing that person as a source of pain, so we're avoiding that, mm-hmm. or we're trying to independently medicate those feelings with bad behavior, with addiction, with, you know, distraction, with busyness, career, whatever, like over time you stop, like you underdevelop the emotional skills necessary to actually effectively love the other person. And so I've just found, just in my own journey of like recognizing areas of my life where I just was underdeveloped emotionally, just not even being able to express my feelings or to convey those in a way that was healthy or helpful. And whenever those things kind of really came to light in my own journey, like that, it the way that Audrey loved me in the middle of that started me on a path towards growth that was just, it was crazy. So like when I look back even on my own story of like, there's definitely been seasons of our marriage where things were good and then things were not so good. And the lowest point in our marriage and in our history, I had gone so numb emotionally that I was not available there for her. And it ultimately could come down to a hardness of heart. It wasn't even necessarily unforgiveness or bitterness. Mm-hmm. It was just a numbness. Mm-hmm. And I would call that kind of the same thing. It's like, I didn't know how to feel pain or to process that. So I didn't know how to feel anything.
Yeah.
And so when we're, you know, talking about these things, like there's always hope that we want to kind of bring people back to, but just like recognizing and doing that sort of inventory of just self-awareness of knowing like, and recognizing when your heart is growing hard or growing cold, how do you sort of interrupt that pattern and start to kind of work through softening it?
I have an answer, but
go for it.
My voice is pretty prominent on this.
Well, you know, it is the Jacob Sheriff podcast.
So you can generically say humility, but that's like, what does that actually mean? Like as a discipline, I would say intentionally exercising gratitude. That's one of the, it's one of the best. Mm-hmm. It's not the only, but it's certainly one of the best that works on a number of things inside of your heart, but you can do it superficially, but to genuinely pursue a gratitude, it creates a window into the possibility of softening our heart. Gratitude is probably the top to try to subvert the path of hardness, coldness, or numbness.
Mm-hmm.
You do a lot of premarital and marriage counseling too.
Yeah, so
you're passionate about the subject.
Yeah, I think, you know, so much can happen on the front end of clarifying expectations. That's helpful. I think one of the things is acknowledging that each party has needs in the relationship. And oftentimes those are withheld because we don't want to come across as needy.
Mm-hmm.
So the, like, we don't want to come across as needy,
yeah,
yet we still have needs.
Yeah.
And so we think, I would just want things to be easy. Like, we don't want to, you know, they've had a long day mm-hmm. at work or a long day with the kids, and we don't want to be one more thing.
Right.
But like we've said multiple times, marriage is work. And so being able to express those needs, express those emotions and feelings, and that's something that has been an area of growth for me, because that's something that I didn't naturally do, that marriage has created opportunities for me to grow in, you know? And so I think on the premarital side, so much of it is, let's hit the practical pieces, because like we could sit here and talk all day about the theoretical pieces of marriage that like they're valuable and all of that, but you really need to be equipped with practical tools. Like, do you know how both of you relate to money? Mm-hmm. Because it's probably different. And just like you mentioned earlier on the podcast, or someone did, you expect the other person to think the same way you think,
right,
to need the same things you need, to communicate the same way you do. Yeah. And very rarely is that the case. So it's just putting those tools in their hands and then teaching them how to talk to one another mm-hmm. is huge.
Yeah.
So good.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's like so many layers and nuances to this topic. Marriage is a massively huge part of our lives. And we're always learning and growing, and it's a lifelong commitment. It's not something you know, it's not like getting a college degree where you go for 4 years, you get your training, and then you kind of go on. It's like, no, this is a decision and a covenant that you're entering into mm-hmm. for the long haul. Yeah. And when we're talking about making marriages and, you know, crafting marriages that can endure the long haul, I think it's always helpful to bring it back to like, what is the foundation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And building that foundation on relationship and discipleship to Jesus, I think for the long haul is so key, because there's parts of us that we're always unable to change. There's parts of the other person that we have no ability to change, but through continued submission and relationship and discipleship to Jesus, we're on the process of becoming more like him. Mm-hmm. And so we get better at loving each mm-hmm. other. We get better at serving each other, and we get to see those things unlocked and developed in the other person. And then over time, it's like, not only are we different, but we get to be a part of that person's journey as well.
Yeah.
And so to maybe kind of wrap this topic up for today and sort of a final thought, like, what are some of those things that you guys have seen in your spouse of like the ways that they're more like Jesus now than whenever you first got married? This is softball.
Here's looking at you, honey.
Yeah, he's looking at me. I think, man, going back to just that safe place to feel like, you know, I don't have to have it all together, because that's the way Jesus sees us. He doesn't, come, and we don't walk in relationship with him because we have it all together. Mm. Or because, you know, we have such wisdom to know how to navigate life. But no, his invitation to us is to really do it with him. And mm-hmm. so I think, in our marriage and early on, recognizing, we've said it before, but like being on the same team, and that doesn't just mean, you know, going after the same goal, but enjoying the process, enjoying the journey, that mm-hmm. being a journey of joy, and the space and the grace to that could be given to one another, as we know we're growing and becoming, you know, and the commitment that I want him to become the best him, and when my eyes are on that, I'm not worried as much about myself becoming that, because I have to believe, or I want to believe, that what God has put together, that it is for the better. But there's something about him that I need to become the best part of myself, and or the best me. And I think that, yeah, that could be taken in so many different directions, and it's not about control or, you know, anything like that. But as we're growing closer to the Lord, then we naturally will grow into better people. And I mean, you said at the beginning, I'm a better person, you know, hopefully in the 16 years. And I would say the same for myself. Like, there's parts of me that couldn't have become who I am apart from relationship with one another. So
yeah,
that's what I would say.
Care to tell me what those parts are?
What do you mean?
You said the parts of me that have gotten unlocked or brought up that never would have.
Yeah, I mean, I think marriage. Of, I don't know, maybe just like courage and being brave, those parts of me. But, you know, you think you know yourself, but you don't really know yourself. It's more in reflection of other people that help you know yourself. And so maybe those places of, I don't know, I can go really, really internal, but like why I do what I do, or what habits I have, or why this matters, even understanding like purpose and, you know, deeper things about myself, it's often in a reflection or someone that is impacted by my actions for the good and for the bad that help you even know your blind spots or the places in you that need more growth and maturing. So yeah, you can ask me more questions, but that's my best answer right now.
I like when we can peek under the hood. Okay. And you say things that sometimes our conversations don't naturally lend itself towards. Okay.
Small hack to get to know your spouse better. Do a podcast.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My wife is one of the most like empathetic and compassionate and loving people I've ever met. And she's also hardwired for servanthood. Mm-hmm. And the positive of that is I feel cared for. I feel attended to. Even with 5 kids, I still feel important, that my needs are cared for. The flip side of it is I also can become selfish and not let it be an inspiration, but just what I receive instead of reciprocate. And so definitely have grown together in being less selfish and self-oriented. And actually wanting to serve. Sometimes I'll drift, get a little selfish, and she's a helper. And so she's like, sometimes the helper needs help. So that's her way of throwing it out. Like, sometimes the helper needs help.
Like, even though it's right what now, I love to do every once in a while, I need some back. Yeah.
So I'll like do the dishes. The helper needs help.
I did actually find out in his journal, because he's very good at journaling. Like, there's a line in there about serving me. I'm like, this is awesome. So
I have, it's because I don't feel very strong at serving yet. It's part of like my daily practice. It's I have good. Gratitude,
which is what you're talking about, and like putting those service. Habits into practice.
Practical, how am I serving? And I find delight in serving my wife, starting her car, making her coffee, just those kinds of things. When I can do the dishes or take out the trash, even though some of these things you can just write it up to, you do this and I do this, that's your chores, these are my chores.
Right.
Like, that was something that I've had to grow in. It's like showing gratitude and appreciation for things that would be easy to take for granted. Mm-hmm. Just that, like, laundry keeps cycling through, dishes keep getting done. And, you know, sometimes I can drift into, that's just the things she does. And it's like, well, hang on. Like, that's worthy of gratitude and honor and thanksgiving. So I'm a more compassionate and hospitable person because of my wife. I would be very selfish without my wife. So,
yeah. And I mean, that's just good leadership across the board, whether that's in the home, at the workplace, with your kids, whatever, where if you just approach it with, this is their job to do, I expect them to do their job, and I'm not going to say, hey, thanks for doing what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a great way to lead people. Like, even if it is the, like, you know, we each have our roles to play in this team of leading our home, I'm still going to show appreciation and gratitude and not take anything for granted.
Right.
And so expressing that, acknowledging it, goes a long way.
Yeah.
So Well, in my marriage, Abby was always, you know, more like Jesus than me. So I was the one that had to add a lot more room for growth. So yeah, I would say areas that I've seen, because I think the question was like, you know,
where have you seen them become more like Jesus?
For her, I would say growing in courage,
yeah,
and overcoming fears and stepping into those, taking risks, I would say is an area that I've seen her grow. And then for me, the list is much longer because I had more room to grow. So it would be things like what Pastor Jacob mentioned of becoming less self-oriented. Mm. That would be one of the big pieces. And under that could fall multiple things. But Abby, like she is very passionate about prayer. And I remember we had just gotten married. And she, or maybe we were dating and this was a phone call. And she's like, so this was like at night, we're about to go to sleep or something. And so she's like, so can you pray for me? I was like, sure. She's like, are you going to pray? I said, I am praying. She said, out loud. I guess so. Just her passion for prayer has really done a lot for me in cult, because I mean prayer is the lifeline for mm-hmm. our relationship with the Lord.
Yeah.
And so I've experienced a lot of growth from being married with her.
Yeah. So, do you share your clothes yet?
I do. Yes. I'm way more.
It's only a one-way share.
Okay, yes. Yeah. It is a one-way share. And yes, she frequently wears my jackets, and I'm okay with it. You know, I've grown in that way too.
Yeah, adjusted your expectations.
Your son is within probably, I'd guess, 3 years, maybe.
Yeah,
he's hit some growth spurts, so I think he's probably 3 years from being able to wear.
She gets to share her clothes with Asher, shoes. Yeah. You know, if shoes are laying around, she's also. Asher's growing because if he leaves like his shoes laying around, Abby's going to hop into them, you know, that he'll feed the chickens or something.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny.
Wow. Those are by Lucas.
I know. Right. Yeah.
Well, what I would say about my wife is that she has grown to be even more compassionate, even more just like her heart for people still blows me away. It makes me feel very, insecure I mean that in a good way, yeah. She can just genuinely love people where I have to work at it. And I become very aware of my need to work at it because she can just walk into a store and her smile just triggers conversations with everybody that just walks by. And I'm like, I don't know how you do that, but it's really good. It's not great for getting anywhere on time.
I was gonna say, like, my aura has never been like, come talk to me, please.
But she just genuinely loves people because she's been loved by Jesus so much. And she, you know, expresses just a level of partnership with the Holy Spirit in just seeing people and speaking into their lives that is a mystery to me. She brings out the best in me and the best in our kids, and is a very inspiring model of what it means to be a Jesus follower. So I love her. Maybe one of these days I'll get to have her on here to balance my stories. It's never fair whenever she listens to these afterwards and she's like, why did you say it like that? Well, because you weren't there to correct me. So I preemptively ask for mercy for anything I may have accidentally said or did not say. Anyway. So before we wrap things up here, I want to give you guys a heads up on our next episode, which will be the final one of this season. We're actually going to be doing a live stream Q&A.
Q&R,
question and response. So we're going to be putting that out there. And so keep your eyes out for the time and date for that. But we want to try to get as many people in on the chat as we can so we can answer questions live. And and we'll do some gathering of questions ahead of time as well. But Be prepared. You know, we can basically cover anything that we've talked about this season or any previous seasons. And so if you've got a burning question, maybe it's on marriage or on hiking or on, I don't know, pottery making or something. I don't know anything about that, but you can ask whatever question that you've got, and get those ready and keep on the lookout for when that episode will be going live. And yeah, that brings us to the end. So if you have not already, be sure to like, comment, subscribe, and share this with somebody that you think it would bless. And we will see you on the next one.